Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. In this podcast, Vince Menzione, a proven industry sales and partner executive, brings together technology leaders in this forum to discuss transformational trends and to deconstruct successful strategies to thrive and survive in the rapid age of cloud transformation. And now your host, Vince Menzione.
Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. One of the goals of this podcast is to spotlight partners that have gotten it right working with the tech giant. And this episode spotlights a partner that has not only gotten it right, they've evolved to a partner of the year status working with Microsoft. This podcast also offers a unique opportunity as my guest Jason Rook is a former colleague from Microsoft who then left to follow this partner on its journey. The interview spotlights 10th Magnitude's business, how they engage with Microsoft, their evolution, and the future opportunities in this age of digital transformation. In his role, Jason serves as the Vice President of Market Development, and he's responsible for all strategic relationships, marketing, alliances, and cultivating key industry relationships. He also serves on the Channel Company Advisory Board and is a regular speaker at events, talking on topics and trends in the cloud and the Microsoft Channel ecosystem. After we recorded the episode, Microsoft announced its 2017 Partner of the Year Awards, and 10th won the Hybrid Cloud and Infrastructure Partner of the Year Award. I hope you enjoy this episode. Jason, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Vince, thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this. Tuned into a couple of your other podcasts, and pretty exciting what you've got going on here, and I'm happy to be a part of it. Thank you.
I'm happy to have you. This is a great time, as you know, with the transformation to the cloud. 10th Magnitude has been a premier partner of Microsoft in the Azure business for quite some time. And I thought this would be a great opportunity to inform our listeners about the business, your business model, and the opportunities in the cloud that you see as the company expands and grows. So thanks again for joining.
Thank you.
What do you and Alex Brown and the leadership of 10th Magnitude want the company to be known for?
Yeah, so that's a great question. You know, our mission is really all around business transformation, and we believe we enable that through public cloud. And so our goal is to help customers really take advantage of all of the benefits that are available in public cloud today to do really cool things around kind of how do they get new and improved software out the door faster to reach new customers or improve their relationships with existing customers? How do they reduce cost and optimize with the power of cloud infrastructure? And so, you know, we started as a software development mindset company. And from the beginning, we've always had this view of we're going to help software makers really kind of revolutionize the way they develop and put out software. And that's our goal. We're a transformation company.
So 10th Magnitude has an interesting story and grew up in the cloud. Can you take our listeners through it?
Sure. Yeah. So the way I always try to tell this story is I kind of interweave myself in here a little bit. And I'll just kind of give you the background. So 10th Magnitude, our founder, Alex Brown, is still our CEO today. He was running the Asia Pacific data center for a large hardware maker. And he left that company and he decided he wanted to start a firm that would basically help people get away from expensive infrastructure and expensive data centers. And Alex is a developer at heart, and he kind of started with a handful of developers, and they took a look out at the industry and they said, you know, we're going to be a cloud only shop. And at that time they viewed there were two choices. It was AWS and Microsoft. And at the time AWS was still probably not as, and this is, you know, this is early 2010, AWS was probably not as enterprise focused at the time. And then Alex knew that Microsoft had this channel, Microsoft very enterprise focused, but Microsoft at the time didn't have an infrastructure play in their cloud. But for Alex, being more of a developer focused person at the time, the idea of Azure and the PaaS services was really attractive. So they kind of just picked Azure and got started with Azure. And so they did, you know, some small engagements, a lot of app dev stuff on top of Azure PaaS services, and things were moving along kind of okay. At this kind of same time, I took a job at Microsoft where my role was to, you know, with a couple other folks to go out and recruit systems integrators to build a business on top of the Azure platform. And you know, at the time, Satya Nadella was running Azure, and there was a belief from Satya that Azure was going to be kind of a channel-enabled product, and we weren't going to be able to scale it without a channel. So there was this investment to go grow a channel. And so I, you know, I had that job, and I was about 4, maybe 5 months into it. It was kind of bleak. We'd go out and we'd talk to big guys of the world. We'd talk to Accenture and have a conversation about how great Azure Cloud was and that they were all in. And then we'd open up the paper next week and find out, you know, hey, they just, you know, spent $1 billion to build a data center of their own. And you kind of scratch your head, think, wow, what are we going to do here? Because nobody's really that committed. And a friend of mine in Chicago called me and said, hey, I just closed a deal with an Azure partner, a guy named Alex Brown. I don't know if he's one person or 20, but seemed to really kind of understand Azure and helped us get our Microsoft deal done. And so I went and I had a conversation with Alex, and I show up and it's Alex in the kind of this crummy little Chicago office, and Alex and 4 developers and a dog. And I thought, oh boy, where is this going to go? That's definitely not like the Accenture meetings I've been having.
Yep.
And 4 hours later, we had a whiteboard filled, and I walked out and I said, this is it. This is what we got to find. We got to find more Alexes. So the entire team in the US, we started to go out and look for these folks that were kind of just starting up, didn't have any legacy infrastructure, had never really sold product before, any of those types of things. And we started to bring them in. And that's where we started to really latch on the concept of born in the cloud. And we even took it so far, and I think you and I were at Microsoft at the same time. We went and we had these kind of 6-foot poster cutouts of Alex Brown and a couple other CEOs from a couple of the other born in the cloud partners that we had. And we had them kind of stood up all over Lincoln Square, which is the big kind of sales office in Bellevue, so that people could walk by and say, that's what a born in the cloud partner looks like. And that's who's going to help me drive my Azure business.
Yep. I remember those days. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And things were exciting, right? A new type of partner, and you know, it wasn't the same folks and a little scary to others, but they were moving the needle. And to the Mantine story is that every time we'd go back to 10th and we'd say, hey, Azure's going to expand and we need you to be a part of it, 10th would always say yes. I remember one time we had just kind of finalized the acquisition with StorSimple. And I went to Alex as a Microsoft employee and said, hey, we bought StorSimple. We need Azure partners to get behind it. I need you to build a storage business. And Alex kind of looked at me and said, you know how far storage is from our DNA, right? And, you know, 3 weeks later, he'd hired a storage person and they were out talking StorSimple to people. But the idea wasn't that he was going to build a storage business. It was that he was going to pull the whole Azure story with him. And that same thing continued to happen. You know, we released the feature and they were on it. When we were kind of talking IoT and IoT Suite, 10th Magnitude was already there. But when IoT Suite went general availability, 10th Magnitude already had 2 deals under their belt. So that was kind of the idea, is to kind of stay locked up in Azure and even one step ahead of the customer if you could. And through that process, 10th Magnitude built this just incredible expertise around kind of everything Azure, became known for the Azure only partner in the ecosystem, which is kind of unique. So today, even today, we don't do Dynamics. We don't do Office 365. We don't do those products, which makes us really unique within the Microsoft ecosystem. And then also we don't do AWS. We're not a Google Cloud partner, any of those types of things. So we are a pure play Azure shop. Well, at some point, you know, we've kind of been through some evolutions with Microsoft and kind of been asked and pushed and pulled in some ways. But today, that is like one of our best value props to the customers, that we are very, very focused. Customers love that about us. And even today, other players in the channel seem to really like that about us as well. So that's kind of been our claim to fame. Today, you know, we've kind of a full service Azure shop. We do data center transformation, which is very infrastructure focused. We do app modernization, which folks would say kind of very PaaS focused. Along the way, we were really early into the DevOps story. And we were really, really, really early into DevOps on Azure. So we've got a whole DevOps side of our business. And then we've got a data analytics and IoT component to the business as well. And then what we just launched is we now do managed cloud as well. So we're now taking apps that we help customers move to the cloud, and we manage those as a managed service provider on top of Azure as well. And that's really kind of what our business looks like. And it really resonates well with customers because we give them a level of safety and trust and expertise that they can look forward to having with us.
Nice. And a focus, very strong focus. Tell me about when you have a client that is also doing an Office 365 move, as an example, since that's also a cloud service, and sometimes we'll combine that with Azure.
Yeah, so we do see that quite often. We do some things that lend well to that Office 365 migration. So we do a lot of any Azure deployment requires some Azure Active Directory expertise. So we kind of help get the Active Directory components up, networking components, those types of things. We'll help with Express Route. But for the mailbox moves and the SharePoint deploy, those types of things, we always look to other partners. And we've got a couple that we have relationships with that we'll kind of bring into deals if we need to. But at the end of the day, we kind of let the customer get really comfortable with their Office 365 provider and pick that person. Because that Office 365 relationship hopefully will be a long-term thing if the partner's really doing their job and getting all the components in place. And if the customer is really doing their job with their purchase and utilizing all of what's available there. So we don't overlap in that world very much. We try to be fairly inclusive of other partners. The ecosystem's changing a little bit. There's a lot more folks that kind of do what we do now, and we still don't do what they do. So we got to be careful about that. But that's the great thing about channels is you can find the right relationships and bring the customer the right solution.
Sure. And when you think about clients, is there a particular client base that you look towards? Is there an ideal customer profile that you target in on?
Yeah. So this is like the million-dollar question, not only with all of our channel partners, because we are an Azure-only shop. And I answer this question in two ways. One, we have not found a segment, so customer size, that is better than another. And two, we have not found a vertical that is kind of hotter than another, so to speak. So, for example, the exact same technology we're using with a very legacy kind of Midwest manufacturing customer is the same technology that we're using with an incredibly innovative healthcare company in New England. So the technology across those verticals, it doesn't differ, right? From a size perspective, the same technology we're using with a 50-person software maker shop is the same thing that we're using with a global or a Fortune 50 customer today. That 50-person ISV is actually consuming more Azure today than that Fortune 50 customer that's collapsing, hundred or dozens of data centers into Azure. So there's, from a segment perspective and a vertical perspective, we haven't really found that niche. One thing that I would say is that from a how do we go to market, we do have some ideas about how we go to market a little differently. When I say go to market, what's our marketing strategy and how do we kind of find influencers and buyers? We have put a lot of kind of intellectual horsepower towards that concept and it's built our marketing strategy that we have. But again, at the end of the day, we're an Azure shop and we have not found one vertical or segment that has enticed us to say that we're verticalized or segmentized.
So talk about the marketing aspect a little bit. Some of our listeners are partners looking to understand how to best engage with Microsoft. How did that start and where is it transformed from a marketing perspective? What was the customer acquisition process then and what is it like today?
So we've got a little bit of a different story than some folks. When we first started, we're more kind of focused on the brand and what we do. And then we got into DevOps about 3.5-4 years ago now. And we were, I think still today, I like to say, when you look left, look right, you don't see a whole lot of other Azure DevOps partners. But at the time we were absolutely the only people doing DevOps on Azure. And we marketed to that DevOps community. And that DevOps community is really interesting. It's a cult, I like to say. And people that are in the DevOps community know everybody. They know all the systems, the tools, the ISVs, the open source tool sets, you name it. And they are eager to learn more. So our approach was to really attack that DevOps community with a very educational focused marketing message. So our marketing message was, hey, come learn how to do, Chef on Azure. Come learn how Jenkins works on Azure. Come listen to our Kubernetes story on Azure. And so we attacked that DevOps ecosystem with the little pieces that they wanted to know, but with just a little bit more learning that they just weren't going to get anywhere else. And in that ecosystem, we have found, people that are in that ecosystem are buyers. If they're not buyers, they're they're very, very strong influencers.
Yep.
So that's kind of the direction that we went, and it's worked out really well for us. And so now as we've kind of evolved, we're continuing to think about what's the next kind of cultural group that we can go market to. Obviously, I think no secret, containers will be the story for the next probably 12 to 18 months, which is kind of an offshoot in my mind of that whole DevOps culture as well. So we'll continue to focus there. The other thing that we're starting to do now as we mature is we are starting to do a little bit of our more traditional partner marketing. So there's some really cool things that we do with some of our channel partners, like a company called Kemp. Obviously, I mentioned Chef. We've got a couple other folks that we're kind of working on a relationship. We're working on a relationship with HashiCorp to go do some joint marketing there. So we'll do some more kind of traditional partner marketing, but right now it's very digital marketing focused at an audience that we know and we really kind of enjoy working with.
And what are your typical partners? Are they more like alliances, complementary software products or technologies that you work
with?
Yeah.
So when I came to 10th Magnitude, we decided we'd kind of put some structure around this because the challenge of the day is that if you are an Azure partner in the ecosystem and you're kind of making it happen, you will get 100 emails a day from every vendor that has some type of cloud plugin, storage appliances to alert tools, you name it. So what we did is we said, Azure is the platform, so that we are wrapped around our Microsoft partnership. Chef is kind of our DevOps tool set. And Chef is also, the thing about Chef is an open source product and they have a paid for product. So we wrap around both of those, right? So we kind of very community oriented, but we also help Chef sell the actual product when it makes sense. So we got Microsoft as our platform. Chef's one of our core partners. And then what we've done is we've kind of looked out and said, okay, who are going to be the tools partners that fill very key gaps for us, right? So you look out in the market today, and in some places we have formal partnerships, some we don't, but we've got a kind of a list of, you know, next gen firewall providers, security providers, that type of thing. So we've got Kemp and Palo Alto that we work with. Obviously we're working with Docker today. We've got the HashiCorp where we've got a relationship. We've got a handful of other partners that are kind of in that tools vertical that we're constantly sliding into customers. We do a lot of New Relic. We do some Sumo Logic. A lot of those types of players, you know, it's a long, long list, right? So if I'm excluding anybody, it's because it's a long list. The list of who we're evaluating next is probably even longer. But from a relationship and where we go to market and spend the marketing dollar, it's really around Microsoft and Chef today.
What about transactional partners? Do you rely on other organizations that might have a transactional, like Microsoft did with its license solution partners or its large account reseller?
Yeah, so that is a place where, you know, throughout 10th Magnitude's history, they've kind of had a couple of relationships with transaction partners. And I know this is a channel-focused conversation, so I'll just say that whole world is shifting really fast, right? And our belief today is it's difficult, if not impossible, to partner with a transaction partner because, I mean, you look out in the ecosystem, it doesn't take a whole lot of research to understand all those guys, especially in the Microsoft world, right? All the LSPs are trying to buy up the systems integrators. And where they can't buy a systems integrator, they're trying to grow that systems integrator business to kind of take it over. So it's a really contentious relationship there.
Got it.
We've entertained some relationships with distributors. But I think today where we're at, just to be really transparent, is that if the customer needs to buy Azure, again, we're Azure only, so we have the luxury of not having to deal with some other Microsoft components. But if the customer needs Azure, we push them through their typical channel, you know, EA. We push a lot of EAs. If that's not the right solution, we are a tier one CSP. So we'll transact that Azure today. That's a marketplace that's still growing. You know, a year from now, Vince, if you and I do another chat, that'll be a whole different conversation, I believe. But we do that. And then we still have a lot of customers that still, believe it or not, get started on Azure with their credit card. And I think that's a lot of something that most of the channel doesn't understand is how easy it actually is for a customer to get into this ecosystem and moving along without you. So you kind of got to be with the customer regardless of how they want to transact today, or you're going to miss the opportunity.
Yeah, sure. You talked about another type of partner. You talked about the ISV marketplace in particular as a customer. Can you expand on that a little bit? It sounds like you're also working with ISVs, independent software vendors, to take their solutions and I won't use the term lift and shift because there's more to it than that, but you're moving them to the cloud as well. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So the ISV space is probably, I'd say one's our favorite, but it definitely is one of our favorite places to play. ISVs have a challenge, right? So they have to continuously figure out how to optimize their business and drive costs out of the business. They have to figure out how to get new software out the door, new features, et cetera, or they can't capture new customers or retain the ones they have. And if you're a traditional, or I should say legacy ISV, and a legacy ISV, in my personal opinion, is anybody who's been in business for more than 5 to 7 years. Because if you've been in business for the last 2 to 3 years, you're probably running on AWS or Azure today, and you're already cloud enabled, and you're having an entirely different experience. But if you're an older ISV, you've got to figure out how to get to this cloud story so that you can compete with folks that kind of want to eat your lunch.
Yep.
And so that story has been really good for us. You know, one of the ones that we talk about a lot is a company called Kcura. They're on our website. We talk about them. And their story was that we kind of met them as they were kind of even a little ahead of us on their own DevOps evolution. They're a DevOps shop, no doubt about it. They're fantastic. But we plugged in with them to help them with some DevOps work. And one of the challenges that they had is they really needed to kind of get off some legacy infrastructure for a solution that they needed to deliver to a lot of customers very quickly. And so we helped them take what was traditionally kind of a Windows Server, SQL Server, web app type model and move that to Azure, and which helped them to scale immensely. And now what we've done is helped them to kind of take advantage of the whole Azure stack. And they're doing some things, you know, I kind of tell folks, they were the first customer that I know of in the US and possibly the world to ever leverage the Azure G-Series platform. And for those that don't know, G-Series was, you know, a year and a half ago or 2 years ago when Microsoft was kind of struggling to keep up with Amazon and the amount of cores that they would provide to a customer and the amount of available memory that would come to a customer. Microsoft just leaped everybody and developed this thing called the G-Series, which I think codename was stood for Godzilla. And that's really how it impacted customers. It was, here you go, in 5 clicks, you can have more cores and more memory than you ever thought possible. And Kcura, I mean, they've moved to the cloud. They've been able to embrace that. And they're doing that type of compute in Azure today. But they're doing it very smartly, right? They're doing it when they need it. And they are even automated to the point where they don't even need to make a conscious decision. The tools and the platform tell them that. So it's a pretty interesting story. And that kind of same thing replicates itself on a number of ISVs that we've worked with. And they're all taking advantage of that. And it's, again, it's about being more agile and using the platform to either get new customers or keep customers and keep the competition out.
For any of our ISVs that are listening, what does that process look like? How long does it take? And is it a rewrite of the application if you're moving from an on-prem to a multi-tenant cloud-based SaaS solution?
Yes. So for with us, a couple of things that are just our go-to-market is probably not too different from anybody else, but we kind of start with a bit of an assessment, just like every other consulting firm. In that assessment, though, we definitely want to kind of talk about a couple things. We want to talk about your culture. So we are a DevOps proponent, so we're going to talk about how we do things like, you know, content or configuration integration and pipelines and those types of things. We're going to talk about your workflow tools and all of those types of things and how, you know, dev and operations interrelate. So I think that's kind of a lot of ISVs today are there already or moving there. So that's not a big conversation. The next thing that we want to talk about is really, we don't like lift and shift. We find ourselves in lift and shift conversations all the time. We prefer the idea of lift and optimize. So, you know, if it's absolutely critical and you need to get out of that colo or what have you, and you need to move a, you know, physical machine to a VM to the cloud, great, we'll help you do it. If you have a VM already, you want to move it to cloud, great, we'll help you do it and help you understand how to scale it and automate it. That's good. But what we really want to talk about is what's running within that construct, right? And talk about the applications and services and how you can take advantage of things in Azure that aren't necessarily available in traditional kind of VM wrapper, right? So if it's a Windows and SQL thing, we want to talk about SQL PaaS. If it's a Linux and MongoDB thing, we want to talk about some of the other PaaS services in Azure as well, right? We probably today, in most of those conversations, we want to talk about containers and microservices and less about virtual machines and some of that legacy conversation. And we want to kind of really push you down the path of true optimization. So, and kind of down that native cloud path if we can. So, and I think that's what, at the end of the day, a lot of ISVs start with this conversation of I've got a pain point and I just need to take care of it, but we want to end up in how do we really help you optimize?
Yep.
Yeah.
And you talked about the managed service provider portion of the business. How big a portion of the business is that today, and where do you see it growing?
Yeah, today it's a small portion of our business, and we see that growing. You know, the rest, that's growth is an interesting conversation at 10th Magnitude, because we're somewhere between an 80 and 90% year-over-year growth clip for the last 4 years. So growth is an interesting conversation. The MSP business probably won't grow that quickly for us. It'll be a very steady, well-thought-out growth. The genesis for us in the managed services space has really been customers have asked us for it. So that ISV scenario that I just kind of went through is really the genesis. Hey, we helped you optimize. We helped you get to Azure, and now you're in Azure, you're enjoying it, but you're still a legal software maker, or you're still you build logistics software. We're that's not the game we're in, right? We don't have that expertise, but oh boy, do we know how to make, you know, containers really zing in Azure. So the question from the customer is, hey, you guys know all that stuff. Can you manage that for us and make sure we've got uptime, we're constantly optimizing, and when we have an issue that's not related to our legal software or what have you, how do you take that and how do you take that issue and resolve it for us? So that's our approach to managed services. We're not going to go the other way down the channel. And I spend a lot of time with channel players that are running really healthy MSP businesses, managing infrastructure and desktops and printers. That's the challenge with the managed service provider, is it's a very broad term. We're going to be more in the application space.
Yep. And is it a national footprint today? I know you started out in the Midwest, Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee initially. How have you expanded beyond that?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and one that will continue to evolve, because we kind of let the market tell us. So we now have a physical footprint. We have an office in Dallas, a growing office in Dallas, and we have a growing office in New York City. And both of those were due to customer demand. We just found that we were doing so many deals in those territories that it made sense to put a physical office there. There's not a whole lot of reason in the cloud world to have a lot of bricks and mortar investment. It is kind of good to have, you know, developers have a place to go and work together. About 60% of all of our work is delivered remotely. Customers in the cloud world seem to really enjoy the idea that, hey, I can go to a firm and I can tap into a networking expert. I can tap into a Cortana analytics expert, and, you know, I can tap into, you know, you name it, a DevOps expert, all with the same firm, but they don't have to be sitting in my backyard. And so for us, we'll probably, you know, in the short term, we'll continue to expand probably a little bit more on the East Coast, definitely based on some market trends, maybe one more physical office space in the near term, but that's about it. And for us, and I think this is the killer for all of your listeners, Vince, is that it's not about where we're at. It's about where the employees are at. And there's no secret that we are all in the middle of a cloud talent war. And so if we find a Cortana analytics person in, you name it, US today, we will make that person an offer if they fit the culture and they have the skill set. And so we'll grow based around market demand and people for sure.
Right. And in the board in the cloud world, almost everything, you mentioned this earlier, is virtual. Now, I wanted to dive in a little bit more. You mentioned the growth. 80 to 90% annual year-over-year growth is pretty outstanding. And how do you control and keep quality in terms of your delivery and your customer satisfaction when you're growing at that rate?
That is a great question. Sometimes we don't. We struggle with that, right? Just like everybody else struggles. And because when you're moving at this clip and you're doing, not only that, but we're doing things that in some degree have never been done before, right? Or at least never been done in a production environment. Because we do a lot of stuff that, you know, still sitting in Azure preview with customers. We've actually, just to be really transparent, we've kind of worked through a handful of different engagement models over the years, with kind of different flavors of how we use project management, how we use the customer's project management, how we structure engagements, those types of things. We even to the point where we've built some intellectual property that helps us kind of keep on, well, I should say, helps us really establish how we're going to do an engagement. We've kind of automated and gotten really deep on the entire assessment piece. And then also we've taken that automation we've done and we've used that to build out kind of a structured engagement model that we use with customers. And as we continue to do, you know, an Azure a piece of Azure work, a piece of Azure work, we continue to build into that intellectual property. So we've just, you know, kind of being a classic DevOps shop, we've kind of tried to process a lot of that out to give our, to mitigate risk. But it's really hard as you're growing, new people enter the culture, you know, new people need to be kind of part of the system. And then also we're doing really difficult things. So, you know, quality is definitely an issue that we're always on top of. But, you know, for the most part, our customers, when they sign up to do some of this stuff, they understand it's pretty complex work. And we seem to have pretty good relationships with our customers, and that hasn't been too much of a problem.
You've been on the forefront of this cloud transformation, and you mentioned it earlier, just the growth. I heard earlier from another guest about how even Microsoft is astounded by how quickly things are changing, how rapidly this transformation is happening. What are you seeing, you know, in this 5 or 6 year journey? What's different today, and where's this moving differently than it was a year or 2 years ago?
So I think there are a couple things that are happening today in the market. And I'll be really specific around Microsoft for one, but I think it sets the context. As a Microsoft partner, when we look at customers, no longer ask, what's Azure? That's the biggest thing for me. You know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, even back 2 years ago and prior to that, every customer conversation had to start with a 30-minute dissertation on what is Azure. That no longer is the case. When we walk into customers, they have a pretty firm understanding of what Azure is, and they even have a pretty firm understanding of what they want to do within Azure. So that has been taken off the table, and that dynamic, just that dynamic alone, has been really interesting. And I think the rest of the channel is starting to feel that as well. So is Microsoft. So I think that's one. The other thing that I think has happened in the market is that all of the blockers are gone. You know, 4 years ago, I walked into a financial services, it was before I was at 10th Magnitude, I walked into a financial services customer and was told, we're never going to the cloud, right? Now you look out and look at some of the deals that we're doing with you know, Fortune 50 financial services firms that are moving a lot of really critical stuff to the cloud. That's gone, right? You got the whole Azure Gov thing now. So you can't, the public sector piece in Azure. I had the opportunity to meet with a handful of public sector customers this week that are focused more in the open source world. And they were telling me about all the open source stuff they're doing in Azure. In Azure Gov.
Yep.
And so that, I mean, that's gone, right? Used to be, you'd get just beat up so badly on HIPAA. HIPAA, it's like a given now in customer conversations, even to the point where it's almost like, hey, we can't get HIPAA compliant internally, so we're going to get the Azure to be HIPAA compliant. And so, yeah, that dynamic has just shifted. And I think that as the pace at which that happened, I think is what caught Microsoft and all the channel off guard.
What do you think the causation of that was? You know, the conversation that no longer needed to happen on Azure. What is Azure? What is cloud computing? Was that Microsoft at the forefront? Was that just the marketplace? What do you think happened there?
I'd love to say that it was Microsoft and a lot of brilliance, but I think it was the marketplace.
Yep.
Because you know, the interesting thing about 10th Magnitude is we do a lot of stuff that's not necessarily Microsoft, it's all running in Azure, but you know, we're involved in this Chef ecosystem, you know, we're contributing to different open source communities. And those communities now are they're cloud, not just cloud first, they're cloud only. So you take Microsoft out of it, you still have this incredible population of people that are doing really cool innovative stuff with technology that wouldn't have no idea what a server is, right? Yep. Or at least not what a physical server is. So I think that momentum, the entire industry has shifted.
You mentioned cloud only, and it made me think about hybrid cloud, because there's a lot of companies out there that are professing that the hybrid cloud approach is the best approach. What's your point of view? What's 10th Magnitude's point of view on that?
So this is an interesting one. I think at our core, we think that eventually hybrid cloud won't be nearly as important. Because as I mentioned, a lot of these kind of blockers have started to fall down and crumble. The biggest blocker that people will still have is just legacy investment and the time it takes to unwind that, right? So today, we do a lot of hybrid cloud work. And hybrid cloud is really, hey, I've got this immense amount of data already sitting in the SQL data warehouse that I spent $2 million for, and I need to depreciate this out over the next 7 years. but oh my gosh, do I need to get better visualization into this and that type of thing? And we build all those layers out in the cloud and point that back to on-prem, right? Because there are places where the cloud may or may not make sense financially today. And the, you know, those are great scenarios where there's an existing investment in place, that type of thing. There are situations that we run into where the customer just isn't ready to make the cloud move with one component, but they're already there with another. You know, one of the things I kind of joke around about is at Build 2 weeks ago, Microsoft made all these announcements around Citrix. And there's a workload that customers want to get to the cloud so badly, but they haven't figured out how to do it. And that's that CAD workload. I think that has been one we've wrapped so many customers in the cloud, but have left CAD on-prem that it's just been crazy. And I think now with these announcements Microsoft's made with Citrix and some of the other technology, we'll start to see like that workload like CAD that starts to move to the cloud. So there's another blocker that will start to evaporate. But you know, that's the tail on that's probably 3 to 5 years before that really kind of goes entirely mainstream. So there's this opportunity where I think the real cloud providers still have to have some hybrid cloud knowledge with them to be able to go drive that. There are other things in the ecosystem that I see are hybrid cloud that we think are more marketing ploys than they are actual solutions. But again, there are some needs that we see, and we're highly engaged in those.
Is there a client that's not a good profile for 10th Magnitude?
For us, I think there are not necessarily clients. There are workloads that are not great targets for us. There are workloads like, for example, SAP. There are people moving SAP to Azure, no doubt. And it's a lot of infrastructure lift and shift. And we've helped a couple customers make that move. We moved a handful of AX and NAV customers to the cloud as well. But we don't necessarily go out and target those workloads. We're a systems integrator. We are Bitcoin operated at times. And those moves are multi-year moves. And they're highly complex. For a service provider like us, those moves might not be as profitable. So we don't target some of those. We definitely do a lot of wraparound and helping people, but I don't whip out like a list of SAP customers and say, this is our attack list, right? So that's a workload that I would probably eliminate. Another one for us that we avoid, and I know Vince, this is a place where I think you can definitely help the channel out, is that we avoid public sector. You know,
Why would you do that?
There are so many barriers to entry, non-technology related in public sector. I think that is an ecosystem. As I talk to other channel players and some of the channel work that I do, when you're in that ecosystem, boy, is it a great place to be. I think that is a place where that existing ecosystem is going to figure out the cloud and they are going to just go to town.
Yeah.
Or what may happen there is that ecosystem will figure it out and they'll start to acquire more private sector focused firms and bring them into that model. It's just that barrier to entry is really tough for us. So we probably won't go that route.
Well, I mean, I have my own point of view on it, you know, maybe share a little bit here and we can talk offline about the rest of it. But, you know, Microsoft has made a huge investment here. And, you know, I think it's, you know, come join us on the journey. I do think that there is a level of expertise that organizations like 10th Magnitude bring to that that may not exist in the current channel today. So I'll leave it there. Still think there's an opportunity for growth there, but it is a huge business, as you know, and growing.
I will, you know, Vince, I can't, I sat with a guy this week at Chef Conf that was all decorated in his Red Hat t-shirt, and he was telling me how awesome Azure Gov was, and he's already in the public sector space. I think there is so much opportunity there for channel players. There's no doubt about it. It's, you know, for a firm like us, where we're at, that's not an apple we're going to go take a bite out of yet. But man, if you're already there, I would highly encourage anybody who's listening to go take a look at that. There is a lot of opportunity.
So, you know, for our listeners that want to learn how to best engage with Microsoft, and we've had several guests talk about, you know, what makes a great partnership, but maybe you could talk about what attributes that you bring as 10th Magnitude that sets you apart. I think I heard a couple of things earlier in the discussion about the journey, about agility and the willingness to dive in on new technologies and be in the forefront for those. What else do you think you bring in terms of secret sauce to the relationship?
Oh, I think probably our best secret sauce is one that hopefully isn't really all that big of a secret. A long time ago, when I kind of first got out of sale or of direct customer sales at Microsoft and moved to a channel role. I was in a meeting with a VP, and the VP told the partner that the way you really define a partnership is that both firms speak the same way about the other firm in front of the customer, regardless of who's in the room. And so that's been the philosophy of 10th Magnitude kind of from the beginning, is that we have this mentality that we will represent our partner, Microsoft, and all of our channel partners the same way. It's kind of, we kind of extend this to all of our channel partners, but we represent them like they're sitting in the room with us. And so when we engage with a customer, we do bring some, you know, third party independence to our conversations, but we do kind of have Microsoft's best interest in mind when we have conversations. And we have licensing conversations with customers. We're not a licensing shop, but we go as, you know, as far as we can go, and we tee up the right conversation for Microsoft when they step in. We have really harsh pointed conversations with Microsoft about how to help them get deals done, and what's reality and what isn't sometimes. And sometimes we bend to help Microsoft when it doesn't help us. And we know that sometimes Microsoft bends to give us a little help when it's not necessarily helping them get a deal done. And that's been kind of our secret sauce, which is really just good partnering. You know, obviously, for anybody who's ever been in the ecosystem, it's a little bit more complex with Microsoft sometimes. But that's been the core of what we do. And we're really kind of as transparent as we can be with them about what we can and can't do. So, you know, we've been transparent with Microsoft from the beginning that we can't move Office 365 seats. And in some places, that has pushed us out of some deals. But we kind of have a mutual relationship. We understand there. We've had customers that we've actually lost an AWS deal to. And as we've walked out the door, the customer said, "Wow, you know, you guys are so good. We'd love to have you come back and do this on Amazon." And we basically said, you know, let's be connections on LinkedIn, but we don't do AWS. And those have been really tough decisions for a systems integrator to make. And those are the types of things that we've done. And I think that's the core of what's made us successful with Microsoft. So that's really tough to do, though.
Yeah. I mean, I would boil that down to integrity and trust, right? And you know, if I had to boil it down to two attributes or one. And, you know, I think about that in terms of some of the other conversations that I've had both with Microsoft and other partners here. But there's another one around field engagement with Microsoft. And you mentioned 80 to 90% annual growth. It sounds like Microsoft is hungry for partners that understand transformation and are diving in on new technologies. And as you know, they're releasing Azure features and functionality almost weekly, if not weekly. It was a 500. There were like 500 releases last year, or some number like that.
Yes.
So how do you meter the field engagement? What does that look like? Because you've got a pretty big field organization, disparate field organization across small and mid-size as well as enterprise customers. How do you engage with Microsoft at the field level?
Yeah. So you know that some of that's a little bit of just kind of that same integrity philosophy. We do, one of the things that we do is we do communicate very well with Microsoft. You know, when we're involved in a deal, we make sure that they know everything that's going on in that deal. And so we communicate with the reps at the field level when we have the chance. We are a part of a number of different programs. We're a national solution provider, so we are managed. We have a great PSC that looks after us. An amazing PSC that's doing a great job for us. We also have a number of Microsoft partner sales executives, so the PSCs that sit in the field that kind of look after us from time to time. So we engage with them. We try to execute on all of the marketing opportunities that we have with Microsoft, and we try to execute as well as we can on all the programs that come our way. Doing those things and being as transparent as possible, I think helps us out a lot. There's no doubt it's a challenge in some ways. You know, one of the things that I often talk about is that there's all this opportunity with Microsoft, but in some ways, and I think this is, you know, the channel talks about this all the time, there's a bit of a tax that you pay. And so managing that Microsoft tax appropriately is important. And there's just so many ways that you kind of have to stay on top of that and do the right thing. And we drop the ball, just like every other partner, we drop the ball sometimes. Sometimes we miss the communication. Sometimes we don't fully understand the program, that type of thing. But on the whole, I think it's that engagement with the right programs and people that are aligned to the channel. And that's what we try to do.
And do you have a dedicated alliance manager for the Microsoft relationship?
Yeah. So that's a interesting, that's an evolving question. That is one that will change someday as well. So I run a lot of our alliance work. We have a model where each of our salespeople have some requirement to have a relationship with Microsoft where it makes sense. And we're constantly evolving that, like the where it makes sense point, just based on geography and deals and segment and those things that often change at Microsoft. 4 months ago, we did bring on our first ever channel focused sales manager. So now we have a person who really kind of zooms in on the programs and deal execution, especially some of those smaller Microsoft deals that kind of happen from time to time. We are actively looking for another channel person to sit in the seat and help as we expand with a couple other partners that we want to do some interesting things with next year. So yeah, we do have a body. I would say, you know, that has been my coaching long before I stepped out of Microsoft to all the channel players, is that you've got to have somebody who's responsible for leading that. And you can definitely tell where partners don't have that philosophy.
And you mentioned having a dedicated PSE from the Microsoft side. Are you now part of the NSP program, the National Solution Provider program?
Yes. Okay, yeah, we are.
Graduated, right?
Yeah. So, and we did that, you know, we made that move rather quickly as compared to some other partners. I would say the reason why we made that move so quickly is that we did, you know, the rule for NSP is that you've got to be in at least more than one region. And so we made that hop into East region about 18 months ago, which made us eligible to be an NSP. And we do, just not to overshare, we do a lot of other things really well. Right? We do it. We take care of our pipeline. I mentioned the Microsoft tax earlier. We PSC, formerly known as PSX, is always up to date for us. We do a lot of that due diligence, which is sometimes painful for partners, but we make sure that we get it done. So that helps us to kind of stay on the radar and part of a good player in the ecosystem.
Yeah. So that's some of the tax that you have to pay.
Yep.
You know, I get some listeners to this podcast from outside the United States, and I'm wondering what you're thinking about and 10th Magnitude is thinking about in terms of international expansion, or are you thinking about that at this point?
Yeah. So it's funny. We, now that kind of the place that we're in, we have a number of customers where we're doing international work, most of them US headquartered, except for one that's headquartered in the UK. We see that global business growing. We have a couple of partners outside of the US that we have relationships through. We're part of the Azure Partner Advisory Council that meets biannually on a global basis with Microsoft worldwide. So we have a couple of relationships through that we leverage, you know, if we have work that we need to get done somewhere. We will, you know, the global footprint, we'll probably have a global footprint at some point. And again, we'll let the market drive us to that point.
Got it.
You know, and I know you got a lot of other listeners. We're watching what's going on in the US with some of the other folks that are making acquisitions. You know, I know who your listeners are, Vince. So New Signature picked up .NET in the UK, which was talk about two awesome firms, right, getting together. I think we'll see more of that in the future as well, and which will be interesting for folks that want to have a global footprint. And the other thing I'll say on globalization is that we have closed this Microsoft fiscal year, we have closed four big deals that would not have happened if Microsoft would not have made those investments in the Germany data center and some of the South American data center investments they're making. That whole Microsoft data center footprint and the way they're going to market globally is just been awesome for us. And we're a US partner, but that global story has been fantastic. And we've, not to make this a Microsoft pitch, but boy, has that been important for us.
They just announced the first data center in Africa, in fact, in South Africa. It was just announced last week. I think that's the 40th region.
Yeah, it's in while we're sitting here, you know, in the US, that the significance of that is really interesting because our customers are all global and they all have different regulatory needs, and that ability to have that same look, feel, and experience in all of those different public cloud infrastructure data centers is just really compelling right now.
So talk about the transformation for you going from the big company, Microsoft, for several years, right? And a different culture, maybe not a completely different culture, but a little bit different in terms of size of the company. and then going to a smaller organization in 10th Magnitude. What was that transition like for you?
So I had the opportunity to be incredibly methodical about my move from Microsoft to 10th Magnitude. And I had an opportunity that most people don't have, is that, you know, I met 10th Magnitude when they were four people and a dog, right? Yeah. And I watched them grow. So I had this opportunity of really knowing what I was getting myself into. So take that off the table. Yeah. The biggest part of the transition for me was that outside of Microsoft, people work really, really hard. I was shocked. And you know, I'd been in the Microsoft channel side for a while. I was shocked at just the pace. Now, again, we're a startup, so the pace might be, you know, we still have the startup mentality. The pace might be a little different, but the pace at which we move is staggering. And the amount of work that we do and get done is staggering. So, you know, all Microsoft's like all other large corporations, there are MBRs and QBRs and leadership structure and that type of thing. We spend very, very little time in this, you know, 50 to 60 quickly growing firm. We spend very little time on those things. We spend a lot of time on customers and solutions and kind of getting things done, as trying to keep it a little sensitive here. And that really shocked me. I knew that was going to be the case, but I had no idea the order of magnitude, no pun intended, that was going to really be the case. Yeah. So that was the biggest kind of eye-opening thing for me, is that just the amount of output we get that I didn't get in a big firm.
What was the best piece of advice you got when you joined 10th Magnitude?
That's a really good question. So I think the biggest piece of advice that I got from Alex Brown, our CEO, as I came over, was not to get, I don't want to say distracted, but not to get overwhelmed by the services aspect. So, you know, my career was, I was a consultant at CompuCom, and then I was a consultant at Microsoft, and then I quickly moved into sales. And so I had been in the services business. I've carried the bag. I've had utilization targets, all those types of things. But it had been a long time. In the services business, Alex likes to say it's guardrail to guardrail. So something's going really well, something's going really bad. And you know, when you're in the middle of the road for the 5 minutes out of the year, you're in the middle of the road, catch a breath, because you're going to be back on one of the berms in a minute. And that is the nature of this business. And so Alex really coached me that, hey, you haven't been in this business for a while, and at the pace we're moving, all those things are magnified, right? So that has been kind of the biggest piece of coaching. And throughout the time I've been here, there's been a couple of times where I have kind of panicked, and I've learned to kind of reel myself back in a little bit. And it's just the nature of this business. And really, you know, I'll just reflect back. I spent a lot of years at Microsoft working with channel players and always seeing that from the outside and never really understanding it. It's an entirely different perspective that I have now, and a whole different level of appreciation for everybody who's running a channel business.
Where do you see things going? I know we didn't really dive in yet, so I'd like to maybe on Internet of Things and Azure Analytics, because BI and analytics are so big and emerging in all industries. Where do you see that going from a business perspective?
Okay, so let me break those into two topics I like to talk about from a channel perspective. Again, I know this is a channel show, so let me keep it that way. On the data side, let me take it from the other way. On the IoT side, here's our challenge at 10th Magnitude with IoT. IoT, it's still really muddy from a device perspective. Muddy to some degree, although I would argue the standards are pretty clear, but just with customers, the standards conversation gets a little muddy. And those IoT deals are slow. People want to prove out, you know, does my sensor connect to this and can I get the data? You name it. I mean, we've done a lot of really wacky stuff with IoT already, from household appliances to construction equipment to pet supplies, right? And so, you know, we've done that stuff, but that whole device connection piece is just, it's a slow sales cycle. Mm-hmm. And to the point, we even wrote some intellectual property last year. We wrote this thing called the 10th Magnitude IoT Field Gateway. Long name, probably need to work on the branding. But basically, the whole idea was, how in the world can we get all this stuff connected faster so we can increase the deal speed? So for us, I think that's something just that everybody needs to understand is that that IoT portion is a little slow. I believe that the channel, and again, I do a lot of work with the channel company and go to events and that type of thing. And I believe the channel is still trying to shake itself out there. And I believe that if you are a legacy player and you make your living today selling like HP hardware and, you know, printers and those types of things, I think you have a business model where you need to go figure out the IoT story and figure out how you shift those types of devices into other types of devices, whatever they happen to be. And you should go talk to Aero or any of the other distributors that are really strong in that space and figure that out. I think that's a logical transformation for that business. I think if you're a dev shop like us trying to figure out IoT, you stay out of the device world and you just stay in the standards and the apps for now. I think that's a good spot to be. With the vast majority of our IoT engagements, what happens in that sales cycle is the customer loses their eyesight on the device and it becomes all about the data. And so shifting over to the data side,
yep,
all of our IoT deals for the most majority have all turned into big data deals where we're doing some really cool stuff with data. Machine learning, like predicting, you know, when the barometric pressure looks like this, this is how somebody should go out and do agriculture related things, right? It was really interesting stuff that we're doing with data and machine learning, Cortana Analytics. The other thing that we kind of have magically been a part of is through that data conversation, everybody wants to see the data. And we are doing Power BI like I never ever predicted. If you would ask me 3 years ago before I came to 10th Magnitude, if 10th Magnitude would ever do Power BI, I would have laughed. If you would ask me 12 months ago, I would have said, oh yeah, it's cool. Maybe. Today, we have Power BI and it feels like every engagement. When I look at kind of the pipeline of what's coming in the door and what skills are needed, it's Power BI everywhere. And Power BI is not the Microsoft big data story, but it is like, it is what sells the Power BI, the big data story right now. So
isn't that because all the dark data, like 90% of the world's data has been created in the last 12 months?
And people need to see it and then manipulate it. And Power BI does a fantastic job with that. And it's so darn easy for a user to go do really cool things. And the pricing is really attractive. We're not a reseller, of course, but boy, is the pricing attractive. And yeah, so that has been our data story. And our data business has exploded and we're doing really cool things there. But we continue to keep, in our kind of the way we break things out, IoT and big data or analytics kind of in the same bucket, just because of those conversations just seem to intertwine so much for us.
Yeah. Well, I see them in the same bucket because you need a way to get all the big data in to the cloud, right? Mm-hmm. The Internet of Things is an aggregator or collector, and then the cloud is the aggregator.
Yeah. Yep.
So was there a situation where you thought, I don't get or agree what Microsoft is doing here, especially now that you're on the other side, but only to find that you were wrong and they had gotten it totally right? And then what did you think about that? How did you react and how was your mind changed around that point?
Oh, about that they've gotten it totally right. That's an interesting question. So, disclaimer, we're pretty bought into the Microsoft story. We're continuously enthused and pleasantly surprised about where the product's going. You know, there to get at a product focus, there was a change that was made 6 months or so ago with remote apps in Azure. And I'm going to get a little technical for the audience, but I'll circle back to something I mentioned earlier. And we were scratching our heads when Microsoft kind of abandoned what was going on with remote apps and remote desktop, because we thought that, and not that we wanted to be in this business, but we thought, we actually viewed it as a competitive threat. We thought when Microsoft figures out how to virtualize all these desktops in Azure, we're going to have all these VMware people crowd in because they're going to leave VMware VDI stories and they're going to come crowd into our market. And so we were confused by that. And then there was the Citrix story. We're confused by that. At Build, when we fully understood the Citrix story and we started to map it back into all these CAD conversations we'd had, and that is the scenario where, and you know, being very granular, but that is a great scenario of where we totally get where Microsoft is going. We get why they did it. We get why they have this interesting channel issue in the middle of it. And we're behind it 100%. So I think that's one where we were kind of scratching our heads. And that place, the other place I think where there's a bunch of places where we're still scratching our heads and we haven't seen what the solution is going to be, but we're pretty confident that it'll be the right thing. Like, we're pretty confident that CSP is going to turn out to be the right thing. But we're also pretty confident that it's not on the timeline that everybody wanted it to be on. But based on the conversations we're having with customers, what we're seeing in the marketplace, we're pretty confident that CSP will eventually be a good thing for everybody.
Well, and we had William Llewellyn on an earlier episode talking about the growth there, and I think it's 60% month over month growth within CSP. You don't think it's fast enough?
So the thing I'll say is a lot of that's Office 365.
Yep.
Which we're not a part of. The other component is, you know, there's been some challenges on the technology side, rightfully so, with CSP and Azure, just getting all those components into the CSP world.
And the commerce engine. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And then there's still this just interesting internal conflict that Microsoft needs to resolve of CSP versus revenue versus EA versus, you know, Boss P, that type of thing. But the writing's on the wall. They're going to get that figured out and it'll work. So we're confident there. But at the end of the day, you know, I was at Microsoft when that whole thing started. That's some really complex, heavy lifting, regardless of how easy as it may seem from the outside. That's some difficult stuff.
So several years at Microsoft, a few years now outside of Microsoft. What is one thing they don't teach but you believe to be true partnering with Microsoft?
One thing they don't teach at Microsoft that you need outside?
What is one thing no one talks about but is true to successfully partnering with Microsoft?
I think this is my answer is probably not the nicest. The truth of the matter, and I think when you figure this out, it sounds really harsh, but I'll kind of back up why this is the case. Microsoft doesn't listen and Microsoft doesn't care. And partners say that all the time. And there's a lot of truth to that. But when you break it down, it's not that the people there don't listen and they don't care. It's that there are so many moving pieces in the Microsoft engine. And there's so many interdependencies. You know, if you change this one thing in a licensing program, it breaks this other thing. And, you know, next new, we have to rewrite, you know, 10 million license agreements, that type of thing. There are all these things. And from the outside looking in, it feels like, man, they don't listen. They don't care. And I think when you kind of get your mind wrapped around that, because I've met with so many players in all my different roles. And now that I'm kind of sitting on this advisory board and that type of thing, there are people that just get so frustrated that with that they don't listen, they don't care concept that they walk. And I think the real answer is get your mind around that and then understand that your job as a channel player is to play the channel game. So when you understand what is changeable and what's not changeable, you understand how to build your business around things you can or cannot change. Then that Microsoft conversation is different. I think looking back on it, that's the one thing that Microsoft probably could improve is how to get that philosophy in the right place and really establish that it's not they don't care and they don't change. It's that there's a reason, there's a method to the madness, and to be successful in their channel, you have to figure out how to play in that game.
I'm going to shift here just a bit and talk about leadership and leadership styles and how you think about leadership, if you don't mind. Is there a quote that you think about often as a leader?
There's a lot of stuff that I think about as a leader. The quote that I use the most is don't get excited. And I had a manager a long time ago before I was ever in the IT world at a summer job that I used to do. And that was his thing. Don't get excited. We have 40 hours to work this week. We'll figure it out. Don't get excited, right? And I think that is, as especially now that I'm in this kind of outside in this channel role, things are going to change every day, if not every hour. And don't get excited. Be calm and figure it out. And I think that's definitely. And I use that with my team. Today I'm kind of managing a couple different functions in 10th magnitude, and some stuff's moving really really fast, and some stuff is some very difficult kind of marketing investment decisions we need to make. And the answer is, you know, don't get excited. We will figure this out. And, you know, every now and then we may miss a pitch, but we still, you get plenty of strikes. And so that's kind of one of the methodologies that are working really well for me outside. And so that's kind of, I guess that's kind of the way I look at it.
Nice. Don't get excited. We're gonna put that in our show notes for our listeners. Yeah. We might want to put that, you know, yeah. Maybe like, you know, be calm, you know. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Is there a book you've read recently, or one that you think of often, or one that you've gifted to other people that you'd recommend to our listeners?
You know, I think for me right now, I just say one of the things that I've been doing is I've been reaching out to kind of my new industry peers and people that I've met. And I've got a friend over at Highland Software, who's kind of doing a lot of consulting work over there. And, you know, the channel is very broad and very different. But one of the books that he recommended and I've been reading is this 7 Principles of Professional Services by a guy named Shane Anesty. And it's kind of I feel like it's a little bit of an academic book, but it's helped me get my mind around some of the things that we're seeing right now in the marketplace. And it's kind of helped me to kind of think about, you know, this book was written a while ago, and a while ago might be a year or two, but how much the world's changed since then. And kind of how we're going to have to continue to evolve our business, because at the end of the day, we're a services company. We're going to do managed services. We're going to do, you know, systems integration. We're not going to be a reseller. And I think the marketplace is driving more towards folks like us right now. And so I think that's been an interesting book I've been reading.
7 Principles of Services.
7 Principles of Professional Services.
Okay. And the author's name again?
It's Shane Anesty.
Shane Anesty. Okay. Yeah, we'll put a link to that in our show notes. Thank you, Jay. Yeah. And then what about if you had a billboard outside of the offices of 10th Magnitude, what would it say on it?
That's a really good question. I think, so if we had a billboard, if we were going to do billboard marketing and we were going to put it up outside our office, today, in today's world, we would put something up about it would be a quirky set of pictures, and it would highlight our culture. If we were going to spend money on a billboard, it would highlight our culture, and it'd be targeted at recruiting talent. That is a conversation, you know. So, and kind of take that a different direction, Vince. You know, I'm running marketing here. We've just brought in an awesome marketing VP who's kind of bringing a whole different kind of channel focus to 10th Magnitude. And one of the things that she and I work on right now is how do we market our product? How do we market our service? And our product is really our channel partner's product. And then the big one is how in the world do we market to attract talent? Because, man, it's not a whole lot to go out and sell Azure and Azure solutions. It's much more difficult to find great people that fit in the culture and bring them in. So if we're going to invest in a billboard today, it would be more recruiting focused than it would be driving a product or something like that.
Nice. I like that. Jason, I think we're running up on time now. I've taken up quite a bit of your time today. I want to thank you for joining us. I think it's a great story about your business, how it's evolved, how you got to 10th Magnitude. You guys are really at the forefront of this cloud transformation, particularly with Azure. Love the story. I'd love to do a follow-up at some point as well and see where you are in 6 months and how the business is changing and evolving.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Thanks for having me. It was great. I love being a part of these channel conversations. And I know you've got a broad set of listeners. And I'd say, you know, the best thing for anybody who's trying to build a business in this space right now is spend a lot of time looking out and see what others are doing and get involved with, you know, different community groups, whether it's through your distributor or whether it's through, you know, any other ecosystem you're a part of, and really take a look at this market, because there's a ton of opportunity and things are moving fast, and it's an exciting place to be.
No, it is. And thank you so much for joining us. It was great to have you on the podcast.
Awesome. Thanks, Vince. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Minzione. Online at ultimateguidetopartnering.com and facebook.com/ultimateguidetopartnering. We'll catch you next time on The Ultimate Guide to Partnering.